So this morning I want to talk about the mystical secrets of the heart. Most people who are not involved in esoteric practices live their life almost entirely within what the Sufis call the world of creation, the world of the five senses, the physical, emotional, mental world. It's what people call life. And they only rediscover their spiritual body, their spiritual nature, their true self when they die, when they leave behind the physical body and then, a little bit more gradually, the ego consciousness. And then they rediscover their spirit nature, their light body. I think this is what people experience in near-death experiences when they go through the tunnel and they discover this light at the other end of the tunnel, which is the light of the self, the light of their spiritual nature. And so it has really been since humanity was first given consciousness. And along with that gift of consciousness, humanity was also given these secret esoteric sciences that belong to every true mystical spiritual path. And they are really quite extraordinary because through these sciences and the practices that go with them, we are given the opportunity to discover, to experience, to live this spiritual body while we are still present in this physical world. To experience, to live this extraordinary secret that belongs to humanity, that belongs to creation. That it is not just a physical world. It is not just the planes of creation. And there is this saying which I love very much, which kind of points to this. God said through the Holy Prophet, "Man is my secret and I am his secret. The inner knowledge of the spiritual essence is a secret of my secrets. Only I put this into the heart of my good servant, and none may know his state other than me." It is this secret of secrets, and if Sufism is about anything, it is about using love to discover and to live this secret of secrets, which is actually who we really are. And we are not just physical, emotional, mental beings living in a physical world. And over the centuries, Sufism has developed a science, an esoteric science, to give us the opportunity to live this other dimension, or as Sufism has discovered, these other dimensions of what it really means to be a human being. And remember that in Sufism there is one person alive on the planet at any time who is called the Qutb, the pole, who actually lives the real potential of what it means to be a human being. There is only one person on this planet at any time who lives the real mystery of what it actually means to be a human being, who lives the full potential of a human being. And that is an extraordinary realization or awareness to have. And so the Sufi path is in a way a stepping stone to discover, to live as much as we are able to, what it really means to be a human being, to be a true human being, a real human being. And Sufism is, of course, a path of love, so Sufis use the energy of love to make this journey, to make this unveiling, to make this gradual realization. And they also use the heart. Other esoteric paths, for example, might use the brow chakra, or they might use other ways to access the spiritual dimension, the spiritual body of the human being. For example, there are Taoist practices in which the light is circulated throughout the physical body in different ways. Now, Sufism uses love and it focuses on the heart. And one of the discoveries of Sufism, this esoteric science of the spiritual dimension of the human being, is that within the heart there are different centers, different spiritual bodies, called Lataif. And different Sufi schools have used different practices to awaken these Lataif, to work with these spiritual centers within the heart. Now, in the particular Sufi school to which I belong, we don't work with the individual centers, we just work with the heart as a whole. We just go within the heart and surrender to the heart and allow the heart to evolve itself through us, to open itself through us and through the grace of the tradition. But at the same time, these different spiritual centers are a beautiful model of the journey. And so I just want to explore in my own understanding, this just comes from my own experience, it is probably wrong if one reads it in the textbooks, I don't know, but of what these different centers within the heart mean and how they are experienced and how they relate to the journey. So I just like to say that it is really from my own experience and might not be correct, but this is my experience. So to begin with, the soul, which is what the Sufis call the nafs, the lower nature, and the physical frame, the physical body, are located in the world of creation, while the world of divine command contains five latifas. The world of divine command is the Sufi expression for the spiritual realm, that it falls directly under the command of him whom we love. The world of creation functions slightly differently. And the first, the outermost center, is called the heart, the kalp. My pronunciation will be wrong, so please forgive it. And it is described as being active. This is the first real experience one has. And it belongs to that experience of love and longing that for many of us begins the journey. Something awakens within the heart, this longing, this secret passion. One can call it divine discontent, if you like. But for us, it has this quality of longing. We want something, we don't know what it is we want. It is really one of the first mysteries we encounter. What is this longing? Where did it come from? What is it doing to me? What is it that I long for? I long for an invisible beloved. At the beginning, one often projects it onto another person, onto the teacher, but it really is, of course, longing for God, longing for that which you cannot name, for that which you cannot see, for the heart's deepest desire, longing for union. It is a very, very, very powerful passion. I think it is the greatest passion the human being can ever experience. Well, as Rumi said, it is burning of the heart I want, this burning which is everything, more precious than a worldly empire, because it calls God secretly in the night. And why in the night? Because for many of us, we live busy outer lives, and the night is the one time in which the outer world, you can, in a way, close the door to the outer world, and you go within the heart, and you stay with those feelings within the heart that have been awakened. This crazy, crazy passion, this longing that grips you in the core of your being, and eventually it goes into every fiber of you, into every vein of the body. It is incredibly, incredibly powerful. You can cry and cry and cry. You don't even know why you are crying. Mrs. Tweedy, you brought back from India as a memento, a little white handkerchief. And she said, when I went to India, it was a blue handkerchief, but it became bleached with all the tears I cried when I was with my sheikh. There is a Persian poem, the world was full of beautiful things until an old man with a beard aflamed my heart with love and longing. Now how can I look at the world around me when it hides the face of my beloved? That is this love, this passion. Sometimes it is awakened directly by the teacher. Sometimes it is awakened invisibly in the night. That calls to you, that burns you, that destroys you. It is this primal passion of the soul. And it is a secret. At the beginning, you don't want to talk about it to anybody. It is like the most intimate love affair. It is inside your heart. I always felt that every other relationship comes from the outside. Somebody has to get to know you. They come closer and closer and closer. But this love affair comes from the inside of the heart, which is why it makes you feel incredibly vulnerable, why it is so painful, why it is so blissful, why it is so tender, why it makes you feel so vulnerable. Abu Sa'id said, "My secret will be a secret," the friend said. "Your bloodied shirt no one will see when the heart bleeds. No one will wake with your moan late at night. The smoke from your heart burning in this fire, no one will detect." And these are not just nice poems, you know. That's why the Sufis use the word blood again and again and again. Like Abu Sa'id said, there has to be blood. This first experience of divine love is incredibly painful, as much as it is intoxicatingly sweet. And it is lived. It is, to say, the greatest passion the human being can ever have. And it grips you, and it takes you, and it burns you. It is like dying from 1,000 cuts. And it is intoxicating. And some days it is just painful, or some weeks or some years it is just painful. And then it is so sweet, and you never knew anything sweeter. And that sweetness can last for a moment, it can last for an hour, it can last for a day. You can't live with it sometimes longer than a moment because it is so intoxicating. This love and longing. It is, the human heart is extraordinary, where it can take you, what it can bear. And this, friends, is just the first outermost chamber of the heart. And it is so intimate. You run between the heart and its sheath as tears run from the eyelids. As close as the tears are to the eyelids is this love, is this longing, are these tears in the heart, and the heart cries. And this is the awakening, the real awakening. That is a burning, that is a passion, that is a love affair. And this really wakes up the human being, like you have never been woken up before. Woken up by tears, woken up by love, woken up by... Sometimes it is actually a physical pain in the heart that grips you, because the spirit body, the body of light that it belongs to, touches the physical body. Or it touches the etheric body, and that touches the physical body. And you can feel this pain in the heart. You won't have a heart attack from it, but almost. So this is the heart, the kalb. This is the outermost chamber of the heart. And that takes you, that fire, that passion, that longing, takes you to the next chamber of the heart, the ruh, the spirit. And this is quite an extraordinary thing, because suddenly you realize that this longing has taken you to a certain light within you that you weren't aware of before. It has a quality of tranquility, have a quality of peace, has a quality of quietude. It is a light that really belongs to God that is inside of you. The passion was your passion, it was a passion for God. It was a longing for God, but it belonged to you in a way, belonged to your nature. You are the one who longed for God. Although some Sufis would say that is actually an illusion. It is God who longs for himself within you. But it comes in the blood. It comes in a way much closer to the plane of creation, much closer to the sensible, tangible world. That's why you can feel the pain in the physical heart. And the spirit is different. The spirit, say, has this quietude, has this tranquility. It is, as far as I have experienced, it's this moment when the longing inside of you, the light that rises up inside of you, meets this other light. There's this beautiful expression, light rises towards light and light comes down upon light until it is light upon light. And it's as if the longing in you attracts you to this other, much stiller center, place within you, which is your spirit, which has a quality of peace, has a quality of tranquility, has a quality of just being. And it is there, and in fact, as the practices develop, as the path goes deeper, you learn to work with that spirit, you work with that light. You take it into yourself. It changes you. But it has a very different quality to the... For me, after many, many years of this longing, of this passion, of this sometimes despair and craziness, then to find this stillness, this peace. O soul at rest, return to thy Lord. Well pleases and well pleased. Enter as my servant. This is really when you enter into the divine mystery rather than just your mystery. The spirit is this stepping stone, this place where the two worlds meet in that sense. It is a very beautiful unveiling, very miraculous unveiling. Suddenly, after all of the passion, all of the tears, there comes something else. Mrs. Tweedy described it very beautifully when, in her first experience of it, when she said, suddenly in her heart there was this still blue flower, infinitely sweet. She suddenly found it there after crying and complaining and being beaten by her teacher into the dust. Suddenly this other quality was there. For her, she experienced it like this flower, this blue flower. It is a very, very different quality. It is really the first taste of one's divine nature. The longing is a longing for your divine nature. Yes, you can say it is longing for God, but God is such an enormous reality that at the beginning, or any time in the journey, really, you cannot comprehend. So in a way, the longing is for your own divine nature, for that light, for that something within you that is eternal, that is not caught up in the comings and goings of this world, in all of the dramas of this world. And I say you long for it, you cry for it, you bleed for it. And then you begin to taste it, you begin to feel it. This quality of tranquility, this quality of peace. It's so silent. After all of the dramas and tears, after all of the sleepless nights, something else is present. And this is this mysterious meeting of light upon light, when it is your divine substance you begin to experience. It has nothing to do with, say, with the comings and goings of the outer world. I remember one of the experiences I had of it was just this peace. It's called the peace that passeth understanding, because it is a gift. And suddenly the days were just full of peace. Whatever happened, there was this peace. It was just there, it was present, it was like a cloak around me, as much as it was something silent within me. And it is a gift. All of these states are a gift. Even the pain at the beginning is a gift. So that really, that second lataif is, as I say, the first taste of this spiritual being that is actually you. The heart awakens you to it, but this spirit, that one is really a spirit, and they say the peace, the tranquility, the soul is at rest. You have found something that is real, and nobody can take it away from you. Yes, of course, it will be veiled. You don't stay with these states forever. You are drawn back into the world, and then you are drawn deeper. You are drawn back into the world, you are drawn deeper. But once you have opened yourself to this, once this center within the heart has been opened, then somehow it is always there, underneath, within you, undisturbed. And that is the second center in my experience.